So who amongst you is taking other classes here? Is anyone taking like John Stilwell's class? You're taking that. Are you new to the Three Jewels?
No, I did John's class before, but then I wasn't able to. Do
right, right, nice. Okay.
So, completely fresh.
Great. You've been here before?
We only once on Friday.
Oh, with Meryl Punzai?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, nice, mm-hmm. Nice. So let's see here, who else we have there. Hi. Yeah, we can get past that too. Have you been here before?
I have been here before, yes. Many times. But I've been coming to many classes before, but I feel it's so important to go back to the basics, which can be the most advanced practice as well. So I think it's really wonderful that we send my collection to this. I'm very lucky to be here. Yes. I need to go back to the basics.
Okay. So that's good. So this is intended to be a real entry, you know, we're going to teach basically how to meditate. And the instructions don't change if you're advanced or just starting out. It's the same. It's just really how you do it. So what we'll do, though, is we'll introduce it at a certain level. And we'd like it to be really informal. I mean, I like the way it's going around in a circle right now instead of the lines of students so that, yeah, anywhere you'd like. So feel free to ask questions at any time, except for one time. We're going to lead a guided meditation at the end. Maybe that's a good time not to ask questions. But other than that, keep it informal and casual. If you have any questions or you want clarification or anything, just let us know. To start with, Allison suggested that we go around the room and everyone introduce themselves. I think that'd be a nice idea. And then we'll finish up with ourselves. Maybe John, want to start?
Sure. My name is John. And I'm sort of here for the same reason Maria is. Just I've been meditating and I've taken a few SCI courses.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken a Dhokshinpa 1 and 2
nice.
And 9.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I just, you know, and I have a daily meditation practice, but you can just always learn the basics over the foundations.
Uh-huh. Great.
And plus, this is course 3 and I haven't taken it, so.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Eva, and I'm really new to meditation. I first started at Tibet House a few months ago, going on for the Tuesday beginners practice. And then I went to a retreat where I met John, and he told me about this place. And we had over there. We had like a very nice introduction to meditation. So it really encouraged me to.
Nice.
Do more.
It inspired you to do more.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. That's good.
My name is Allison. Thank you for teaching.
And I want to thank Allison. Allison is the force behind Three Jewels. She's been working here for the last 3 years or so. How long?
Four?
Sorry to underestimate me. The Three Jewels exist because, in great part because of Allison and her devotion and dedication to keeping it open, ensuring the classes are here, that there's teachers here, and that it's well promoted. So without Allison, we wouldn't have had a class tonight, and we all wouldn't be here. So thank you, Allison.
Thank you.
Yeah. My name is Mike. I don't have any formal education in Eastern philosophy or meditation. I find myself aligned with things philosophically, but never actually done any meditation, so
cool.
Give it a shot tonight.
Nice. Okay.
My name's Rich. I've just done some kind of periodic sitting and stuff in the past, but I've never really had that kind of an introduction. So.
Okay,
kind of
super.
Interesting to go through that.
Yeah, put a little structure around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
My name's Heather, and I've done a couple retreats, and I've taken some classes, and I've read, and I've done different things, but I don't have a daily sitting practice, and it always comes back to that, like the reading, and it's rooted in the sitting practice, so I want to try to build on
that. Yeah, that's really about it. It does come down to daily practice, so
yeah.
Hopefully that will be a result out of all these weeks. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Andy, and
2 years ago, did a Vipassana course, and was very inspired. And I have a very busy life in New York, and so I go in and out of doing daily practice. So I'm using this moment to push me back in, so and learn something new.
That's great. Both Melissa and I have some experience in the Vipassana meditation traditions as well. Cool. Yeah, they're really great.
My name's Sandy, and I've come to a lot of different talks and teachings through the Three Jewels and other places, and I'm trying to start a strong daily practice, and I've been slipping, and then I got the email about this class. So it was like, you know, I was like, I need to like really get on top of that, and I went to have a more formal meditation class, so I was really excited about this.
Oh, good.
Hi everyone, my name is Jovica. I'm coming from Serbia, it's an unusual name. I'm pretty much new in all of this. I had a like, very big interest in this for the last 10 years. So I've been reading a lot, and recently I started courts with Lama Zhang, how karma works.
Uh-huh.
And I'm updated on the Bridges emails list, so that's how I got here.
Great.
And make a little knowledge about
stuff. It's great you're studying with John.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good. We're just going around introducing ourselves. If you
I guess so. I'm Russ. Hi, I'm Brandon, and I'm here to just improve my meditation practice and learn more.
Great. So you've got a daily practice or something?
Sort of, yeah. Nice. I just started actually 2 weeks ago, but I've been pretty regular since then, twice a day. So.
Oh, that's great. Very good for you. How are you? We're just doing a quick introduction of everyone around the circle.
So have we gone around already?
Yes, they have.
I'm just to learn about the class really soon.
Great. Great, welcome. Do you want to start or should I start? Okay, so my name is Michael Dunn, and I've taught a few courses here at the Three Jewels, some ACI courses, different types of courses over the last 4 years. My background extends beyond that. I've been a student of Geshe Michael since about 1999, and before that I've done some of the Vipassana meditation retreats. And, you know, formally I've done all of the ACI courses and a lot of the ongoing studies that Geshe Michael and Lama Krissi have been giving over the years. What we wanted to do, this is a Dharma Essentials course, so it's not the whole of Course 3 in terms of the ACI class, but this is something we've wanted to present to people in a way of, once again, bringing things back to the basics. Like Anna Maria said, it's always good to even if you are an experienced meditator, to review the, you know, the basics of the meditation. So it's also an opportunity for me to do that. As much as for you, it allows me an opportunity to, one, you know, go back to the basics that was taught by Geshe, that's in our lineage of how to practice meditation, sharpen my skills, and then communicate that to you, and then serve my Lama. I always say this, I mean, Geshe has always asked us to teach, so one of my, you know, it gives me great pleasure to be here because I'm able to fulfill my Lama's wishes of teaching. So it makes him happy, so I'm happy. I've done several retreats. Retreat meditation is very different sometimes in a daily practice. We're going to focus on the daily practice elements. We're going to have a very exciting meditation. It's called the Lam Rim. So it takes a lot of the philosophy as well as part of our object of meditation. There's just huge benefit in a daily practice. And once you start meditating, your life will change, right? You'll see some immediate benefits. You'll see some conventional material benefits, and then your life will change and you'll just get happier. Things will change internally as well. And if we can make that happen for you, then that's just gives us a lot of happiness ourselves.
So I've studied many of the ACI courses here at Three Jewels. Over the years with Michael and
else is still teaching here?
You said it was James.
James and Lizette, if anybody has taken any of their courses. And then I studied meditation with Camilo Cerro, who is also a student of Geshe Michael and Lama Christie. And I've taken several of the Vipassana retreats and studied at Shambhala Center, some of their meditation retreats. And so, you know, so hopefully we can, you know, the information in this class tonight will be from Tibetan scriptures. And then, you know, we'll draw on our experience, our limited experience of meditation, and hopefully it will be helpful to you. But this, we're hoping, is more of an informal course. You know, we're not lamas, we're not gurus, we're just people who maybe have a little bit more experience in one area that may be able to help. And maybe you have a little more experience and you'll be able to help us. So we're just hoping that it will be a place where we can all ask questions and, you know, draw from each other's experience as well as the scriptures. So.
Okay. So as I mentioned, this is the material. This is a four-week class, right? So we're going to meet next four Wednesdays. This is an abbreviated version of an ACI Asian Classics Institute course on meditation. So it's in a way a compressed course, if you will, because some of the material doesn't get elaborated on as much as in the longer course. However, it's a great, this is in a way the essence, this is the body of it. So there is further material if we wanted to go in further. There are additional readings and additional materials for more meditation, or more, what you want to call it, like horizontal breath of what we're talking about here. So the Dharma Essentials courses were created by Lama Marut. Anyone heard of Lama Marut? He studied with him when he comes to New York. He took it upon himself to take the longer ACI courses and to compress them down and to make them more accessible. One, there's no homeworks. If anyone has had homework commitments for their ACI courses, there's no homeworks for this course. And there's just a commitment that we request that people actually practice. So there is a daily meditation. And of course, as everything else, it only benefits you if you practice, right? So the more you practice by actually keeping that, it's a 15 minutes a day, then the more benefit you're going to get out of the next 4 weeks, okay? So that's did you have a question? No. That's basically the structure of the class, where we're coming from. Any questions on that? Okay. Should we talk about the lineage? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we talked about different lineages here. Some of us have studied the Vipassana lineage, which is a Southeast Asian lineage. Melissa mentioned Shambhala. We've studied in different traditions within Tibetan Buddhism as well. What we want to let you know is that there's more than one way to meditate, right? There are many, many forms of meditation across different cultures, and they're all equally valid. It isn't saying that one is different or better than another. They all have their own benefits. And our experience and my exposure has been to the Tibetan Buddhist lineage. And we're in a lineage which you may be all familiar with. It's the same as His Holiness the Dalai Lama. We used to be up here. He's in the other room. And so it's the Gelugpa lineage of Tibetan Buddhism. And the material we're going to draw from is directly from Tibetan Buddhist sources. To be clear, though, meditation didn't come from Tibet. It came from India. And then it was, of course, brought into Tibet by great Indian pandits and the early wave of Buddhism into Tibet. They translated a lot of the Sanskrit material from India, and then for 1,000 years practiced it and did it in Tibet. And now it's come back out to us. Okay, so the texts we're studying from, some of them go back about 1,000 years, and have started in different languages and gone into Tibet, and then through a program called ACIP. It's come out and been translated, and now we're able to teach it, and we're able to host it here at the Three Jewels. So it's quite an evolution of this material. Like, none of this is from us. This comes from an incredible foundation of actual historical practice. Okay.
So then we wanted to talk a bit about where meditation fits in with a daily practice. Meditation is a very important part of a daily practice, but it's not the only part of a daily practice. You definitely have other aspects that will help you in your meditation. So if you're having a hard time on the meditation cushion, having a hard time getting to the meditation cushion, there's other factors that come into play, and you can work on those factors as well, and that can give your meditation practice a boost, as well as when you're meditating well and you have a regular practice, this will reinforce other elements of a daily practice. So, you know, one of the first parts of a daily practice is watching your ethics. And, you know, you find that across all traditions, Eastern and Western, it's all the same. Basically, ethics are, you know, how do you act in a way not to harm others? Helping others, right? So there's no killing is a big one, protecting life. No stealing. I don't know, no sexual misconduct. So, you know, no cheating on your partner, no flirting with somebody who's in another relationship, because that really affects not only your mind stream with all the worry, but the mind stream of others. And then, you know, you keep your ethics also in your speech, no divisive speech, no gossiping or idle talk, no lying, right? And then there's also the part of ethics that I think is the most difficult for us to keep, and those are the mind, watching how your mind is working. The two big ones that I notice that I struggle with every day are not being, or the thing that you would not want to do is to be happy when others don't get something they want, right? We all take a little bit of pleasure when, you know, something happens to somebody that hurts them, and it's a little bit funny to us. Like, we went to 16 Handles the other day, and, you know, you get these big cups of yogurt, and they're overflowing, and you have all the toppings on them, but then you take it to the register, and it's like $16, you know, and you're like, oh my God, you know? And so we're standing outside eating our ice cream. That just happened to all of us, you know, sticker shock. And then you see somebody else with this huge, big frozen yogurt with all these toppings, and he looks so excited. And, you know, we're like, oh, let's look at his face when, like, they bring it up at the register, right? And that's, like, that's a subtle form of this, like, taking pleasure in his misfortune, right? Like, it doesn't seem like much, but it's true, you know? That kind of, like, perverted way of thinking about things. And then, you know, being unhappy when somebody gets what they want. And this happens a lot of time, you know, when you're jealous of anyone, basically because they got something that you wanted. And then the final one is ignorance. Just having, believing that something can come to you without having planted the causes for that to happen, or believing that you can plant the causes for something to happen and not get the effect. So not believing in a cause and effect relationship. Thinking that, you know, you can harm others and no harm will come back to you. And, you know, this is, it happens every day. It happens when, you know, you're walking innocently and talking to your friends, and the bike messenger, like, comes, like, right in front of you and, like, cuts you off and bumps you, and you shout at him, because obviously, like, he wasn't watching where he was going. you know, and he bumped you, and you know, he invaded your space, this me space, right? So you think you can yell at him. You think that by you yelling at him, like, it's going to make everything okay, but it's, you know, that's our ignorance, and that's the root of why the bike messenger came in the first place and, like, knocked us off our guard, why he bumped us or, you know, invaded our space. So watching your ethics is one aspect of a daily practice. And another aspect is doing something good for another person, practicing a little compassion, you know, stepping outside of these thoughts of me all the time. Doing, like Lama Marut likes to say, a random and secret act of kindness to do for someone else. And then Dharma study is a part of a daily practice. So every day, it's a good practice to either study a little bit of a Dharma, Dharma being anything philosophical. It could be Christian, it could be Hindu, it could be Buddhist, it could be poetry, anything that's a little bit uplifting, you know, something that's talking about compassion or a right view of the world. This is all a little bit of study. Then, of course, meditation. Meditation is a tool, a technique that we use to, you know, not only watch our mind and get to know ourselves a little bit better, but when we have concentration, we can train our minds in certain ways. We can train our minds to think good thoughts, think positive thoughts, think constructive thoughts rather than destructive and divisive thoughts. And then yoga or any kind of physical activity, Tai Chi, anything that gets the energy in your body moving. And It really has a profound effect. You need to do, in a daily practice, something that gets you moving every day. It has an effect on your subtle body. It has an effect on the energy within your body, which will get moving when you do meditation, when you can concentrate well. And then the final part of a daily practice is actually retreat. So that's not something you do every day, but every once in a while you need to get away and you need to meditate all day for one day or 3 days or 10 days or several months. But a retreat is definitely a part of a spiritual practice in general. So in the Tibetan scripture, there are many terms for the word meditation. In English, we only have one word, which is meditation. But in Tibetan, just like in Eskimo language, whatever that is, in Inuit, they have many words for snow. Well, in Tibetan, they have many words for meditation. And each of the terms that is used for meditation gives you a little bit of a different feeling of what meditation actually is. So I studied meditation in these ACI courses and at Shambhala Center for several years before I really felt that I knew, like, what the purpose was or what the point is or, like, what meditation really is. It was always something that people told me I should do. You know, it's part of a daily practice, but what is it really? So hopefully by explaining these terms, you get a little bit of a feeling what it is. It's not the end goal. It is only a tool that you will use to get to the end goal. So while it's very important, we have to remember that any short-term benefit that you get from meditation, any temporary happiness or calmness or more focus and clarity in your day, maybe you'll encounter more pleasant people the more you meditate. Any of these side effects of meditation is not the end goal. So when they happen, you should enjoy them, but you should use them to get to the end goal, which is liberation from any kind of suffering, like complete liberation. So it's just a tool, but a very important tool.
Right. So just one thing on that. In your spiritual career, you know, you're going to have a long, evolving spiritual career, and you're going to involve all of these daily practices, or the practices that Melissa went through, from, you know, ethics all the way through to retreat. Meditation will be fundamental for your progress along your spiritual path. Right? Meditation is required for moving between your spiritual levels. Your main progress is going to occur during deep states of meditation. That is how you're going to be having these spiritual realizations that are going to help you and create the awareness that you have of the world around you and your own self as well, such that they transform you. Okay, and that part of the spiritual transformation happens during deep states of meditation. So the skill that Melissa's talking about here is absolutely essential for you to actually achieve your goal in this path, whether it's nirvana or total enlightenment. You must be in states of deep meditation in order to get there, okay? And it's a very graduated path. It's well evolved and it's well documented. But between each stage, it occurs through deep states of meditation. So the skill we need to acquire is fundamental for us reaching our end goal. And we're going to be doing it for that reason. The motivation should be for that larger reason of, my God, I want to get out of suffering. I want to help other people get out of suffering. How am I going to get there? I need to learn how to meditate in order to be able to achieve these results. Therefore, I'm going to start meditating now. Okay? Just something to keep in your mind of why we're actually here, why we want to learn about meditation, and why we want to do it in the morning at 6:30 when we wake up, when we really would rather be asleep. Okay. So let's get into some of the technical things. Any questions on anything we've talked about so far? We've kind of just been talking about a lot of entry level, you know, open stuff. Any questions? Going to Claudia. Okay.
Actually, yes. Sorry. I've been wondering if prayer in the Christian culture is a form of meditation. I mean, I'm not Christian.
I think it is. I think it is. I think different cultures have different forms of meditation. They would call it a different name and maybe have a different practice about around it. But I would think prayer is. Yeah. And then there's so many different kinds of Christian prayer. And there's different orders within Christianity, which do things differently and have different levels of prayer and focus on meditative practices. Yeah. Okay, let's jump into some of the technical things. As Melissa mentioned, she had a reference to the Eskimos, so I'll pick up on that. Meditation is very common in ancient India. It's done at the householder level, like we are all here. It's done in by people who belong to certain religious order, whether they're Brahmins or different sadhus and different sects. And even then, going further in Tibet, it wasn't just the monastic order of the ordained monks and nuns who meditated. It was lay people, and all classes of lay people who were meditating. In our culture, it's a lot less common, okay? But in that culture, they had... We've got six different forms of meditation, okay? There's six different names I'm going to call. Much like she said, the Eskimos have like 20 different names for ice because that's their life, right? Their world revolves around ice. Therefore, they have a lot of different names for just because they understand the subtleties of it. So there's a lot of different kinds of meditations. We're going to go over six of them here. Maybe we can close the door just so it's a little less distracting. So I'm going to give two words for each. First is a Tibetan word, just to plant the seed for the Tibetan information, and then the Sanskrit word. So that also just plants a seed, and it may be more familiar for some people who are maybe coming from a more Indian tradition, say from yoga. They may understand or be more familiar with some of the Sanskrit here. So the first one, the Tibetan word is called Gompa, and the root is G-O-M, Gom. Okay. Now the Sanskrit for Gompa is bhavana. If you want me to spell any of these, let me know. I'm listening to the board. We'll do that later. So, gom is, it means to review. It means to go over and over again. Okay? So one of the first kinds of meditation is what we call a habituated meditation where we review your object of meditation again and again and again. And it's very useful in terms of memorizing things and using meditation as a form of memorization and familiarity so that you understand things from front to back and back to front. And you just have this, through this review, through applying your meditative concentration on it, you have a lot of understanding about what the material is, in this case, what the object of meditation is. We're going to be doing a fair amount of review meditation over the next 4 weeks. So this is something that we're going to be practicing and habituating ourselves here now. What we want to do is habituate ourselves to a virtuous object, because we have this, our mind has a tendency to like pick up on things. I go to sleep at night. If I had a bad day at work or somebody disturbed me at work, I'm thinking about it at night, right? And I'm reviewing it in my head. It's just a nature of the mind. So why not put something virtuous in front of the mind and do something with the mind in a virtuous way rather than letting it absorb itself onto something which is not virtuous, right? So you get the benefits of the natural state of the mind to constantly replay things. Like we're constantly replaying our past and what happened today and things like that. So that's Gompa or Bhavana. The second one is called Samten. In Tibetan, it's Samten, S-A-M-T-E-N. In Sanskrit, it's called Dhyana, D-H-Y-A-N-A. Samten is comes in an order of the Mahayana tradition. There are six perfections, and meditative concentration is the fifth one. So the that is the form of meditation as it occurs in the six perfections, or the Prajnaparamita. And this type of meditation is it's really one about is a concentration on an object for the benefit of other beings. Okay, there's a lot of bodhicitta in this one because it's in the Mahayana tradition. There's a lot of desire to do this and achieve this meditation as a result of your willingness to reach your goals for the benefit of other beings. Samten is applied with the other perfection of wisdom to combine to form a very powerful combination of Samten being the tool and Vipassana, the sixth perfection actually being the object. And between the two, you achieve the results of the six perfections. And this is something we can go through at a later time. But this is another form of meditation you might hear called Samten or Dhyana. Third one is called Nyomjok, N-Y-O-M-J-O-K. And in Sanskrit it's Samapatti. Samapatti, S-A-M-A-P-A-T-T-I. And there's a form of very balanced meditation where you're actually between the two extreme states of dullness and agitation. And we'll talk about these obstacles of dullness and agitation as we get further in the class. But some people can perfect their state of mind to be entirely balanced and perfectly balanced. They're not really, their object of meditation then becomes a state of perfect balance. The thing with this is there's no real object other than that state of balance. It's not a virtuous object, and it's not a non-virtuous object. It's a neutral object. As a result of this, they spend a lifetime doing this. They obtain a virtuous, or I call it a fortuitous rebirth in what's called the form realm. And it's somewhat a higher rebirth. At the end of the day, we'd rather be a human in the desire realm, but that's another story. So Nyomjok is a form of meditation, where balanced meditation, where you achieve a result in the form realm. Okay. The fourth one, Shine, S-H-I-N-E. And the Sanskrit is Shamatha. Okay. Shamatha may be something that you hear a lot about in terms of meditative concentration, meditative equipoise. Shamatha is the form of meditation which allows us to attain an incredibly sharp mind. Shamatha is a form of single point of meditation. And once again, when we put that on the object of vipassana or wisdom, then you have an incredibly powerful tool to reach your goal. So shamatha is another form of concentrative awareness, a concentration, concentrative ability. The fifth one is called Tingning Zin. I'll spell it T-I-N-G N-G-E-N D-Z-I-N. And in Sanskrit it's called Samadhi. Samadhi, I believe, is the eighth limb of Ashtanga. Does anyone confirm, can anyone confirm that? Seventh limb? What's the eighth limb?
Yeah, no, it's the eighth.
It is the eighth limb? So it's the ultimate in a yoga, in Ashtanga yoga with the eight limbs. Samadhi is the goal, right? It's the penultimate evolution of your practice. Asana is only number four, right? Third or fourth?
Third.
So there's a lot of, in the eight limbs of yoga, well beyond just the asana we generally practice. And the end is samadhi. Samadhi is incredible single point of concentration, right? It means your ability to focus on a single thing unwaveringly for a distinguished period of time. All of these, as you can see, are just tools. We talk about single point of concentration, we talk about meditative awareness, we talk about what the mind is doing. In and of itself, meditation is only a form of training the mind to do certain things. It needs to be married with an object. And two of these refer to being married with an object. And for us, the object is wisdom, right? We want to choose a virtuous object. We want to do something and have as an object something which is beneficial to us. You could meditate on something evil, right? You know, really, there's both sides. And you would have the same effect, but on the other side of the scale. Like, it's like a laser. You can do good things with it, or you can do destructive things with it. The power of the mind is amazing, and through meditative concentration, you can do an amazing number of things. I hold that people who really excel in our world, that do amazing things, have the ability to concentrate and clear away a lot of the confusion that happens in our daily world. Say, the great business leaders, or political leaders of the world, or people who are great, you know, saints and givers in the world, single-pointedly are driven towards things because they have the ability to focus the mind. Great musicians, artists, you know, they can all excel because of their meditative concentration. It's a form of basically creating a tool which then can be turned on something, whether it's an art or a belief or something else like that. One of their end goals is another form of meditation called Nyamshak Jeto. It's spelled N-Y-A-M-S-H-A-K. And then Jetop, J-E-T-O-P. So Nyamshak Jetop is the ultimate combination of meditative concentration applied towards the object of wisdom. And wisdom applied here is what we're defining as the ultimate nature of the world around us and ourselves. So the object and the subject. So a meditation on wisdom itself, which is the true nature of these objects, can lead to this form of, it's a form of meditation when you actually achieve that state. And it's called the direct perception of emptiness. So when you're at the spiritual level where you're actually having a non-conceptual experience of ultimate reality, you're in this state of Nyamshak Jeto, which is a meditative state. Okay, and it's a lot of philosophy involved in that. We won't get into that unless you ask us, but that is another form of meditation. So you can see throughout all of this, these are only six. There are probably more types of meditation, even in our Tibetan lineage, right? So there's so much here. Once again, just for review, we're going to be focusing on the Gom meditation, or the Bhavana, the review meditations, and we're going to be focusing on that aspect. So let me just finish up with saying those are six different terms for meditation. There are three types of meditation in our Tibetan lineage. The first one is review, as we've talked about. Our review for this course is going to be what's called a Lam Rim. Anyone familiar with Lam Rims? Lam Rims means step on the path, okay? And it's a unique form of teaching in which an entire outline is given for a philosophical end result. So from the beginning all the way to the end of a teaching, it's an outline format of what steps are on this path. And you'll find that in our lineage that it's very structured. We're going to go through the 6 of this, then the 5 of this, the 8 of that, and the 9 of this, the 7 of these. And some people have, I like that personally. Some people don't like that. They want something a little more loose. Our lineage here is incredibly structured and formal like that. What I like about it is it always gives me some place to hold on to. When I do these Lam Rim review meditations, I know exactly where I am on this, on the path. I know where I am on my meditation because I'm on this part of the review and this part of the steps and the outline. And I can always have a reference, and then I can bring my mind back to it, right? In your spiritual career, as you say, as you move through your realizations, you always know where you are because it's always outlined for you. None of what we're going to do here is new to us. This is thousands of years old, really. People have been meditating for a really long time. This isn't something that, you know, someone just realized in 1959 and decided to start writing about it. So over the course of, you know, 1,000, 2,000 years, all of this has come down to us. And these are absolutely elaborate steps on the path, which actually you will go through. So we're going to do review meditation, and that steps on the path are going to be our object of meditation. So the second type of meditation is called analytical meditation. Analytical meditation is very different. It's where you take a concept and you hold it in your mind and you debate yourself with it. You're like, is it true? Somebody said this. I read it in a scripture from this, you know, authentic source, but I don't feel it in my heart. I don't understand it. Well, what about this? What about this? And you start debating in your own mind some of these tenets which come out in whatever tradition you're studying. So an analytical meditation is one where you actually try to resolve any doubt and use logic in many ways to get to a point of your own conviction about an issue, right? You might take, for example, the first noble truth or the first Arya truth. Lord Buddha said, you know, life is suffering. You know, it's the first thing he said after, or the first thing he taught after his own realization and his own enlightenment. He said, life is suffering, you know? But don't take it on that. You guys should be sitting there and debating it and say, but I had a great day today. You know, how can life be suffering? You know, look at the face of that baby and all these other things. And you have to convict yourself. Not because someone said something, but because you believe it and have experience of it directly of the suffering life, that is a true statement. Okay? And once you resolve it as true, then you can kind of go on to the next step. Okay? So analytical meditation is very profound, and it's an important step. In Bogchenpo, they do a lot of analytical meditation on emptiness and other things. Yep. So the third form of meditation is called fixation meditation. This is an ultimate application of samadhi, which is the single point of concentration, where you take your single point of fixation, where after you've gained this skill, meditative skill, and you can hold your mind fixed on an object for 15 minutes, or 5 minutes, 15 minutes, you know, an hour, whatever it is, you then fixate it on a single object. And the object should be a virtuous object, if you want a virtuous result. If you want a neutral result, fixate your mind on a neutral object. If you want a non-virtuous and a negative result, place your fixated mind on a negative object, right? It's simple math. So we're going to focus, you know, when you get to that point with great single point of concentration, ultimately, you would apply it to a virtuous object like emptiness itself, the wisdom of how things truly exist in ultimate reality. And by doing so, you're able to have a huge amount of realizations on it. Ultimately, there's a fixation meditations on the subtle body. And a lot of Indian traditions have this as well, where you focus single-pointedly on perhaps your chakras, right? Or on certain areas within your subtle body. And by placing your mind there, it has a very profound effect. Okay, on things which actually are much deeper than what we're actually experiencing now in our coarse physical world. So samadhi is used for that. It's a form of a very fixed single point of meditation. Any questions on the six types of meditation?
Maybe it's a subtle thing. I maybe don't understand it. It's been fixation and review.
Mm-hmm.
They seem somewhat the same.
Review is quite discursive. You actually are going through your mind a series of maybe 20, 30, 40 steps. And you're remembering it. And then you get to 30, you have to go back to 29, 28, and you review it backwards. Or then you challenge yourself and you jump in at step 20. And can you do it from there? So you're basically burning it into your mind. You're burning this pattern in. Fixation is no discursive. You're kind of just no real sensory experience, no mental activity, reduced mental activity other than single-pointed on whatever your object is. Okay.
So when you're reviewing, you're not actually thinking about things, you just...
Right, so what you would do, you do a review meditation, you get to the point of the first step of the Lama Rim is life is suffering. and then you get to that, we use that as an example, and you stop there. And you're like, I don't understand, I don't quite get that. So then you switch over to an analytical meditation. Okay, and then you debate that. And you're like, well, I read this, and then the teacher said last night this, and, you know, but what about this? And I had this from my own upbringing, and you try to resolve it, right? And the point of the analytical meditation isn't to have answer all your questions, because you're not going to be able to. Then the next time you're in a class, or with your teacher, you say, I've been analyzing this, I've been meditating on this, and this is, I'm having an issue with this. And then they'll answer it, okay? So the analytical part comes at any point in your review that you want to stop, okay? So you can review, get up to a point of analytical meditation. You could go one step further. When you actually come to a certain conviction on something, you can flip over into the third meditation, which is fixation. And you're like, I totally understand life is suffering now. I feel it down here, not up here. I totally understand how it's deep-rooted, it's endemic to our life here. In samsara and desire, I cannot escape suffering all the way from birth to death. It's absolutely, and you just know it to be true, and you stay fixated on that realization. Okay, so in that case, you would do all three forms of meditation in one sitting: review to get to a point, analyze that point, and then when you resolve it, fixate upon it. There's many ways to work it.
So, fixation meditation, would that be the same as? Just building your conviction towards whatever it was? Would that be the same?
Okay, you want to fixate on something which you've got conviction of. And you don't want to fool yourself. So you don't want to be fixating on something just because someone told you. Okay, because then you're not mapping it with enough conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so effective. You fixate on something which you really truly hold to believe true. So you've got to have some realization of it. And at first, depends on where you are in your spiritual path. It could be really deep-seated spiritual realization, or it could be an intellectual realization, an awareness, a realization in that respect. It depends on, everybody's different. Some people could be hugely advanced and just have these wonderful, deep-felt spiritual realizations on something, and then you would fixate on that. Mm-hmm. Is anyone sleepy, or is it too hot in here?
Is it a bit hot in
here?
Okay.
Maybe we could turn the fan up a little bit. Yeah, I noticed that. Okay. Any other questions on the six types of meditation? We can come back to things. And like the beginning of each class, we can take questions from the previous week after your week's meditation, so that you, if anything's come up, we'd be more than happy to try to answer that as best we can. There we go. Seems to be a little uneven. All right.
So then we wanted to go over a brief outline for what we'll be covering in this course. We'll be talking about the six preliminary activities that you do before meditating, the six conditions of an ideal meditation environment, which, you can make sure that the place where you practice daily meets these six conditions. conditions, but they're really, really important when you go and do a retreat. It will help your retreat become a success. Then we'll talk about the correct posture for meditation. It's a 7 or 8 point posture. We'll talk about that in detail. And then we'll talk about the actual mental processes during meditation. There's 5 problems. So over the thousands of years that people have been meditating, the great masters have basically distilled every single problem that we could possibly come up with into 5 categories. So we'll go over those 5 broad categories of problems that you encounter with your meditation, and then the 8 basic corrections that they've come up with. Then we'll talk about the 9 stages of meditation that your mind goes through as you progress in your meditation practice. And like Michael said, after this course, you should be able to know exactly where you are in those 9 stages of meditation. And then we will get into the object of the meditation we'll do for this class, which is the Lam Rim. So in the next class, we'll start talking a bit about the Lam Rim.
Okay. So that's the structure of the next 4 weeks. Cover each one of those in a little bit more detail over the next one. So I'm going to start on the first. What I'm going to do is introduce what's called the 6 preliminaries and the 7 ingredients. So I'm going to explain them and kind of describe them, and then we'll stretch our legs a little bit, and then Melissa will lead us in a guided meditation of these same, in a meditation order, okay, in an actual practice order. So the first thing, in any structured environment, will always be preliminaries, right? So there's always preliminaries to the main event, and then as you go on, later on you realize that the preliminaries are the main event. So we're in this stage, the preliminaries are the main event, okay? So these are 6 things you kind of want to do every day with regards to your meditation practice. They're going to be our main focus over the next week, okay? We're going to talk a little bit about the environment of your meditation and how to establish a daily practice next week. What's the beneficial ways of time of the day, how to do it in your busy house or in your apartment and noisy and all of that type of stuff. So we're going to jump ahead to, okay, you've already woken up, you've got your meditation space. The first thing then, the first of the preliminaries, I'm going to assume a morning meditation practice, so wake up and clean your room. Clean your room, okay? It doesn't mean go get out the vacuum cleaner. It means to put things in order, okay? You're basically moving between states of consciousness, but unconsciousness and sleep into your waking state. You need to actually transition your mind into a place where it's going to be conducive to your meditation, which is a very controlled environment. Cleaning your room puts things in order, puts one area of your mental states behind you, getting you ready for your next one, which is your meditative concentration. You'll find that if your meditation area is in order, your meditations will go better. It's Melissa was talking about it earlier, one of the outer factors which affects your meditation. So it's not to be taken lightly. Just like ethics will affect your meditation. A clean room is kind of one of the first ones. They say in the monasteries, the monks get up and they sweep first thing. And it's not because it's really dirty in the last 24 hours. It's because it's a practice. It's meant for this, right? At the same time, when you clean your room, you want to set up your altar. So this is still the first preliminary. Clean the room and set up the altar. Here's an altar, for example. We're not going to go over how to set up a traditional Tibetan altar. Unless you want us to, we could spend 15 minutes on it. But it's not part of this course. Your altar can be anything. Your altar should have a few elements on it, which are, you know, basic elements. I think it's good to have a photograph of somebody who you respect, right? Somebody who you admire, someone you look up to, someone with some spiritual or any kind of ideals or achievements that you wish to attain yourself. So it's nice to have a photo of something. That's why on most altars you see photos of either lineage lamas or their teachers and things like that, or His Holiness the Dalai Lama, something like that. It's also nice to put things on the altar that are precious for you. So the second one is called offerings. So the second preliminary is offerings. Here you see water bowls that are turned upside down here, but quite often you can just put water on your altar, okay? And they have representations of other objects, but you can just put water. You could put an orange, you know, some offering. You could, you know, a flower. Put something up there that you're actually giving, okay? It's an act of giving, really, an offering. Then you have to sit down, right? So you have to sit down, and like we're all doing now, you have a little bit of a meditation area, some form of a seat, which Melissa will talk about
next time.
And you just take a seat and get comfortable. One of our primary things for meditation practice is to be comfortable and to have something which allows you to have a straight back. So it's best not to slouch. So something that you can hold for, I mean, the daily practice here is about 15 minutes. So whatever you can hold comfortably for about 15 minutes. Okay, then so the fourth thing is called visualizing a holy being. Now that you've sat down, what are you going to do? Here you start your actual mental processes. Everything up to this point has been physical: cleaning the room, making offerings, setting up your altar, sitting in the right position. Now you're in your right position. Your mind should be focused on the objects of meditation and getting that way. So these are preliminaries. Now these become mental in a way, if you will. So we visualize internally a holy being. It could be the same person you have an image of on the altar. It could be somebody, once again, from any lineage, any tradition that you like and admire. It could be a historical figure, like, you know, it could be a Jesus, it could be a Gandhi, it could be Mother Teresa, it could be anybody. It could be your partner, it could be your parents, you know. That's not, the important is thing is that you have an understanding of them, of having qualities that you'd like to have yourself. Okay. So you look up to them for these things.
We'll
do that here. So Melissa's pointing out there's a step before that that's not in this outline. It's called generating refuge. I'm sorry, taking refuge and generating bodhicitta. Okay. This is also a mental activity as well, in which you... Is that the right one? Yeah? Yeah. Melissa's going to lead us through an example of it in the guided meditation. But with this holy being, you're actually taking refuge. You're going to them for some kind of shelter. Refuge in this sense is there's something in them that they can help you with, okay? Their ideals that you hold them up to, that you admire in them, can help you in what you're wanting to do. You take shelter in their wisdom, their being, and their realizations. And the other one is really, really important. It's called generating bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is the state of mind where you wish to do things for the benefit of other beings. Okay, it's the bodhisattva ideal. It's the ideal where we're actually undertaking this process not for our own benefit, but for the benefit of others. And one of the ways we can benefit others the most is by achieving our realizations, and we can help them better as an enlightened being than we ever could as a samsaric suffering being. So in our goal, our virtuous goal of trying to get enlightened as fast as we can, we are in effect helping them by working so hard in this world and doing a daily meditation practice to get to our end goal of nirvana or enlightenment, so we can better then help them. Okay, our ideal throughout all of this should be altruistic. It should be for the benefit of other beings. When you're in your bed in the morning, you're out late the night before, and you don't want to get up and meditate, you will not do it for yourself. When push comes to shove on tough days, you will do it for somebody else more than you will do it for yourself. So it's a great motivator as well. And it shows how much we will further we will go for somebody else and help somebody else rather than it is just to help ourselves. So that's basically going for shelter and establishing an altruistic mindset for your practice. Next we have a subset, and it's called the seven ingredients. Okay, so within the, is it the fifth of the, or the sixth? Our numbering's off. We'll correct it. We'll send this around to you. Within the fifth or the sixth of the, and there's different orders. There's some people count certain steps and some don't. But within the, we'll call it the sixth preliminary, it's actually the fifth preliminary because, yeah. Within the fifth preliminary, there are seven sub-steps, okay? And these are called the seven ingredients. And these are really beautiful. They serve to do two purposes. One is to gain merit, and the other is to purify obstacles. So one's, we're really addressing our problems in this. And we're trying to establish a pure state of mind before we actually turn on to the object of our meditation. So the first one of these seven is a mental prostration. Remember, everything at this point is mental. So with the holy being which we've identified in front of us, or our figure that we have visualized in front of us, and the visualization, you know, could be something that you feel more than visual. I have a friend who's a musician, and they have a lot of difficulty with visualizations because they're so, you know, they're so strong in their hearing, and they hear everything more than they see things. So his working with a visual figure is kind of rough and kind of loose. I have friends who are painters and they get really detailed in the visualizations. The important thing is you really have a sense and an understanding that this being is there in front of you. You prostrate to him. Prostration is not really common in our culture. We have a form of it, old school. We bow to people, right? Bowing was our form of prostration. I remember before a dance, two partners used to bow to each other and a curtsy and a bow. You know, there is a culture of a form of respect for the person in front of you. We've lost it in our generation, but it is there. You know, we do it. This is taking that, and it's going to go a little bit further with it, and saying, you know, this being in front of me, there are things in you that I totally respect and I totally admire, and for that, I place myself lower than you. I want to be like you. You see qualities that are higher than what you have in you, okay? And it's a beautiful act of surrender to these beings. So that's mental prostrations. The next is making an offering in your mind. Because of these qualities of this holy being, you then create a mind, an expanse as limitless as the mind of an offering. It could be instead of a one rose, it's a sky full of roses. Instead of one orange, it's a mountain of orange trees. And you can make them as big as you want because you're making mental offerings, right? And these are very, very powerful things. Even though these are actions of the mind, these are imprints that you're creating. And they have a very, very profound effect on your mind stream, okay? You don't have to go out and buy a mountain of orange trees. This is just as effective to imagine orange trees and with conviction offer them to these beings. The third one is a really lovely one. Here's the confession. Here's the purification. Purifying obstacles. And we start this with a confession. Confession is the first form of a purification. In any tradition, all traditions have a form of confessing. The ordained monks and nuns in our lineage have a regular practice once a month to confess. And they go to their person who ordained them and they confess. Confession is really big, obviously, in churches and different traditions around the world. So it's a great practice. And even talking to someone about something is a form of confessing because you get it out, you know, and it's not burdening you anymore. You cannot meditate if you're holding things in. It just destroys your subtle mind, and your inability to concentrate is a good part because you haven't cleared your mind and purified it to begin with. So this act of confession is really a beautiful thing. And you know, try to pick something that you did over the last 24 hours that you can readily identify with. And something you did, something you thought, or something you spoke, right? So one of the doors of body, speech, or mind. And say, what did I do? What did I think? What did I say that I regret? You know, because I know that you know, an hour later, I was like, that was so stupid. Why did I do that? You know, here's an opportunity for you to clear that out of your mind. All right. And so it's a form of purification. Opposite to that, the fourth of the seven ingredients is rejoicing. So just like you did with confession, you take your last day, and out of any of your actions of body that you did, anything you gave, anything you said that was nice, or anything you thought that was beautiful, including your meditation practice, you rejoice about it. You're like, yeah, that was good. You know, that felt good. I'm so glad I did that. You know, and you continue the imprint of doing it again, right? You're just reinforcing that positive thing by rejoicing in it. And rejoicing is a really beautiful thing. Like what Melissa was talking about earlier, of being unhappy when people get things they want. If you can just switch your mind to be happy when everyone gets what they want, you're rejoicing in them getting what they want and their satisfaction being met, and your world just gets so happy. Rejoicing in others and everybody getting what they want is so beautiful. So here you're rejoicing. Rejoicing is the opposite of a confession. Fifth, in front of the holy beings in front of you, you request teachings. They are holding some knowledge, some ideal that you would like to attain, and you have to request it. You're humbly requesting that they teach you to be like them. Okay, so you're opening yourself up to be taught and to be a student, and then they will actually grant you the qualities that you admire in them. And that's going to help you get to be them. The sixth is you actually request these teachers to stay in your life. And this has a larger meaning because without teachers, we wouldn't have the instructions to meditate. We wouldn't have instructions to reach our goal of nirvana or total enlightenment. Teachers are incredibly precious for us in our world. Without our teachers, we wouldn't be getting out of suffering. We wouldn't have any opportunity to get out of the samsaric realm. We wouldn't be able to serve others in the best way we possibly can. So this requesting them to stay in our lives is really profound, so that you always have teachers in your life, okay? And then by doing this, you get subtle things, like you get an email about a class, right? Or, you know, John Stillwell decides to keep teaching, you know? And that's a result of your requesting teachings, okay? And we could talk about how these, the actual results of all these actions, which is quite profound. I mean, in your meditation, you're like, you should be questioning, like, how does making an offering change my world? You know, how does requesting teachings affect me? And these are some of the things that probably come up in your meditations. The seventh of the ingredients is to dedicate. You've just done a huge amount of virtuous activities with these seven, and you're dedicating the activities that you just did. I liken it to a little, it's like a water, like a little bit of water. If you don't do anything with it, it's just going to evaporate. And all the virtue which you've accumulated from doing these seven ingredients is going to go away. If you bottle that little bit and you dedicate it towards something, and you say, all the virtue that I've accrued from doing these meditations, these seven ingredients up to this point, I give away. And start with something simple. I dedicate it to me being able to meditate tomorrow morning before work. You know, have it work towards a cycle towards your own practice. Bless you. So dedicate what you just did, actually seals it and makes sure that it doesn't lose its value that you've gained. And then so that's the seven ingredients, which are seven subsets to the fifth preliminary. So we have the sixth preliminary yet, and that is called requesting blessings. And this is also a really beautiful practice. Because of the qualities of the holy being which you're visualizing in front of you, you're requesting their blessings to be able to achieve the gradual results of your practice towards your spiritual goals and the removal of the obstacles towards these very goals. Because in a way, what's really happening and preventing you from attaining your spiritual realizations that we all really crave in some way or another is that there's obstacles. I got this job, I got this thing going in my life, or I don't have teachers, or there's nowhere to practice, or, you know, all of these things are just merely obstacles. When you request a blessing, you're requesting the removal of those obstacles, and therefore allowing your spiritual practice to go forward. So it's a it's a positive and a negative thing at the same time. You're asking for the removal of negativity and the blessing to be able to practice. So those are the six preliminaries with the seven ingredients. Okay, and once again, you see steps. In a way, it's a form of a Lama Rim. It's a review. It's an outline. Any questions on these six preliminaries? You're probably all wondering what they are. Some people have written them down, but this is all documented. This material is available in the PDF files for the Dharma Essentials 3 course. But if everyone's completed their email address on the handout, we can send this information to you so that you have it all and you know exactly what the six preliminaries are, what the seven ingredients. And that will help because that's our meditation for the next week. So you don't want to be at a point where you're like, oh, what was the third preliminary again? Because that's not meditating. You should have a reference for it. Okay. Any questions on that?
So we're going to do a meditation. We're going to do the daily meditation that we'll be doing for the next week. It's probably going to take more than 15 minutes. If anybody would like to get up and stretch or use the bathroom or get some water, we can take a 5-minute break. We'll probably go about 5 or 10 minutes over. So I apologize for that. We don't like going late. But tonight we will. So if you need to leave, you may. But stretch and be back in like 5 minutes.
Or less. We just take a quick stretch and then that'll finish up with that. So we'll update the steps and we'll send it to people. Where's the handout? Where's that sheet? Oh, it's over there. Very nice to give a 5-minute break. No, we're good. He's like, you have to stay up. You can stand up, but you have to stay in your spot. Yes. So everyone get up, but not leave the room. That's great. You can send the PDF for the whole course. Okay. You gonna leave me to enlightenment?
If I can get over my anger.
Questions?
Not really.
Yeah.
I'm actually taking a bond retreat workshop this weekend.
Good for you.
And they have their own traditions and meditation.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that is. It's so true. There's so many traditions and meditations around the world, and it's amazing. You know, I grew up in America. We don't have too much of that. You know. So when I started meditating, it was really lovely. It's like, this is nice, you know. There's everything good in our life. I said, I wish I started 10 years ago, or 10 years before I actually did.
Do you just choose one method that works for you?
Yeah. I think it's important to experiment, right, and to see what traditions work for you. Different ones, you'll be exposed to certain ones and not others, so you'll have, you know, that issue. I've tried a lot of different ones, and what I do now is one that I find holistically works for me. Yeah. It's also because I found a teacher in addition. So I felt at a certain point I needed a teacher to go further, that I just, you know, this isn't enough, you know, just knowing. So, and then I really, really liked working with Geshe Michael, his teachings and the Dharma and the philosophy side of things. And that was a perfect complement to the daily practice. And then it, you know, just seemed to be a really nice fit. So that's just, personally, that's what, how I ended up.
Do you also work with breath in this meditation?
We do in our lineage work a lot with breath. We do it in different ways. In some pranayamic ways, we work with the outer breath as a form of way of affecting the subtle breath and the subtle body. In our meditation, though, for this 4 weeks, we're not going to touch on that. We're just going to use the breath as a bit of a guiding. I call it a handrail to hold on to as you try to bring your mind focused in. The breath is a great way to bring your mind away from the external world into something local to you. So that's the extent we're going to use the breath at this point. Claudia, could you ask people to come in?
Yeah.
Thanks. I guess we're gonna. Is everyone else coming in?
Yes, in the
back. Ah. Great. Yeah, I guess he's just in the room. So, how many people have a meditation cushion and a place to meditate now in their house?
Does a pillow count?
Yeah.
It is okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great.
Start.
Really helps to have a dedicated space and some dedicated. That can be cheap. We went actually down to Canal Street and got something really inexpensive. And you know, it's all you need, just something that says, okay, that's for meditation, you know, dedicated purpose.
Okay, so get in a comfortable position. We'll go over the position in more detail next time, but it's mostly important that you're comfortable, because if you're not comfortable now, that will be a distraction and you won't be able to meditate. So if you need another cushion or you want to use a yoga block, feel free. It's very important that your back is straight, and if you're slouching a bit, you'll get sleepy in your meditation. So get comfortable, a straight upright spine, and if you're used to meditating with your eyes closed, you can close your eyes. If you're used to meditating with your eyes halfway open, you can do that as well. Start by watching your breath. Pick a point at the tip of your nose where you can feel the air come in and go out, and get really interested in the quality of this breath. Maybe it's a little cooler when it comes in and warmer when it goes out. And see if you can follow the in and out of your breath for ten cycles. This should be very difficult. If you're honest, you may not get past two. If you become distracted by an outside noise, just bring your mind gently back to the breath. So we're going to begin by taking refuge. Take refuge in the fact that this daily meditation practice can change your life. It can give you what you're looking for. It can eventually save you from your own death. It sounds crazy. But take refuge to your ability. That this meditation practice can give you some benefit. And then we'll generate bodhicitta by thinking of someone close to you who is suffering, who has a problem. Think about materially or emotionally what you can provide them with to help them with this problem. Visualize this person and visualize yourself giving them what they need. See how it makes them happy, and see how it makes you feel in your heart or in your body. See how it makes you feel to see them happy, to see their suffering removed from their face. Then visualize a holy being in front of you. If you have a spiritual teacher, you can visualize them. If you don't, you can visualize someone who has high qualities that you admire. You know, maybe someone like Mother Teresa or Gandhi. Or maybe it's your mother or your father. Begin by visualizing just their outline. And see if you can bring up the feeling of what it would be like for them to be sitting in front of you. Maybe you can feel their breath, or smell their scent, or you feel their heat. Maybe your heart flutters when they come near you. Then we will make prostrations. So think of one or two qualities in them that you admire and rejoice in those qualities. This is our form of prostrating to them. Then make offerings to them because of their admirable qualities. We make offerings. You can offer them something worldly. You can offer them your favorite possession. Offer them something very precious. Or even more powerful, offer them a good deed that you've done today. Then we will purify. So think of a negative action, or more importantly, or maybe more powerfully, think of a negative thought that you had today. Maybe you took joy in another's suffering. Replay this action or this thought in your mind. Understand why this was an unskillful action or thought. See how it actually harms you, how it can harm you in your meditation if you don't purify it. And then regret that you've done this action or thought. Don't feel guilty, but bring up the feeling that you would have if you just realized you drank a entire bottle of poison. You know, that feeling of, I really shouldn't have done that. That was really stupid. That was very stupid. Try to feel that in your heart. And then offer, as a makeup activity for that negative action, your makeup activity was coming to class tonight to learn a little bit more about meditation or to review what you already know. Acknowledge that as your makeup activity, and with full confidence, feel that your negative thought or act has been purified merely by confessing it here and performing your makeup activity. It's gone. And feel the lightness in your heart from this obstacle being removed. Then rejoice in something good you have done today, or better yet, rejoice in the good that you've seen another do. They say that you get 10% of the merit if you just rejoice in what another has done. Then request that the Holy Lama in front of you gives you teachings. Request formal teachings, such as the teachings that we have here at the Three Jewels. And if you are ready for it and you feel strong, you can request informal teachings. Know that before you request these informal teachings, if you ask for them, they will come. So if you want to request teachings on generosity, request them from your Lama, but know that they will come, maybe in a form that you'd rather they not. Maybe something precious to you gets taken. But request these informal teachings, because this is the way that we progress along the path, recognizing the small teachings throughout our life, every day of our life. Maybe request teachings on patience. And then beg that these teachings stay in your life. Beg that you do not become jaded by these teachings and push them away. Beg that those who teach the Dharma stay in your world. Beg that they stay near you. Then request blessings from this holy being. think about something in your practice that you would like to improve. Maybe you want to begin a daily meditation. Ask for the ability to do so. And then, because they say it's not good to leave your lama out there hanging, it's not good to leave a holy being out there hanging, invite them into your heart so that they may stay with you for the rest of the day and until your next meditation session. This way, if you need help, you can call on them, you can ask them for help. So invite them in. See that they accept your request. They are happy. They are smiling. They are so happy that you were smart enough to ask them to stay with you. They become brighter, like there's a light within them spilling out. And they begin to float up to the level of the top of your head, and they get smaller and smaller until they become the size of a pea. And then they float over and hover above the center of your head. They turn so they are facing the same direction that you are facing. And then they drop down along just in front of your spine. And they rest at the center of your heart. In the middle of your body, just in front of your backbone. Then we're going to dedicate this merit of doing this brief meditation by visualizing a bright white light which begins from the heart center of the holy being. Watch this light. This light is the merit that we've collected tonight. Watch it spread through their body until it spills out into your heart center. And it spills over out of your heart center into your body. And it pours out through your skin. It envelops everyone within this room. It flows out of the walls of this room. And it expands until it touches every being in New York, everyone in this country, and it continues to expand to the ends of the universe. Watch as this white light hits those who are suffering. Watch them become happy. They don't know why. They don't know how, but they feel happy. And when you're done spreading your merit, you can come back to the room. Slowly open your eyes. So does anyone have any questions on that meditation, since that's what we'll be doing for the next week? So when we lead a meditation, it usually takes a little bit longer than when you do it on your own. So this meditation should definitely be able to do it in 15 minutes. So good luck.
Thank you. Thank you. So what we'll do if everyone's put their email address on the sheet of paper, we'll email everyone the meditation so that you remember it. And there's the PDF file with some readings for this class as well. So I think everyone should, there's only about 15 pages a week, it's not that much. So if you could read that.